This is my last lecture, and I thought to dedicate it to a thing which I think is very, very important. You know that in the last few years, the international community, is especially UNESCO, is coming every time with another decision which, because of the Palestinian or Arab majority in UNESCO, always have vote for decisions which actually deny the presence of Jewish people in the country in general and in Jerusalem especially. I would like to say that this is a good reason to come and to speak about, to show you that actually stones speak. And every archaeologist and historian of the country knows that this is not a reality, that it's not true. It is against facts. And I think that it is very important to show it to the general public that this is really the thing. With God's help, if I come next year, I do the same thing only about Jerusalem. Because people don't know that actually from 1840, the Jews were the majority of the population of Jerusalem, and the number of the Jews in Jerusalem exceeds the Muslims and the Christians together. There was over 60% of the population. And suddenly, Jerusalem became a very important issue twice in the history. Once when it was under the Crusaders, and once it is under Israel. Because when it was under Muslim hands, no one was interested. And for me, who was an eyewitness, I can tell you that during the years 48 and 67, when it was under Jordan, under the Muslims, under King Hussein of Jordan, not one single president, king, or person of importance in Arab countries made a pilgrimage to Jerusalem. Today, everybody talking in the Muslim world, everybody talking about a pilgrimage to Jerusalem and so on. You had a good chance. Why didn't you use it? And this is very, very typical. So I will leave this for next year, but you understand that the necessity to show the country as it was in each period, each century, is essential to the understanding of the history of the country. First of all, I start when I speak about the country. I brought this picture, a map of the country, which to my opinion is one of the most beautiful I've seen. It shows the backbone of the country where the Lake of Galilee up and the Dead Sea down are actually just in the middle of a country which also expands to Transjordan. Transjordan was always a part of the country. It was never independent as it is today. And only recently, I want to tell you, because of the existence of Makaronte or Makairos, every language calls it a different place, a castle in which John the Baptist was beheaded on the one hand side, and John, the Gospel of John, saying that the baptism of Jesus took place on the eastern bank of the river Jordan. Jordan calls itself Holy Land, because that is what is there, Mount Nebo, Makaronte, the place of baptism on the east, make it the Holy Land. But for me, I'm not surprised, because Makaronte, which is mentioned as I said, as a place where John the Baptist was beheaded. On the other hand, when already the rabbis in the Talmudic period are deliberating about the borders of the country, they say, one of the sages there who is sitting there says, I don't have any problem. My father had a flock of goats in Makaronte. And whenever a libation was offered in the temple in Jerusalem, all the goats in Makaronte sneezed because it was so close. So you see that we understand the country, that Makaronte was the border, the southern border of the country. It is south It is as in the middle of the Dead Sea on the eastern side. And so you can see the country was big. And I will not deny that the coastal plain was of non-Jews. This is comes still from the Philistine period, when the Philistines were there, not Palestinians, Philistines, which are mentioned in the Old Testament. And so it went. And the point is that usually many of the cities on the coastal plain, they were the first Christians in the country, because the people who lived there were pagan, and as they were fed up with the pagan religions, they accepted Christianity. Nevertheless, Jews always lived also in the coastal plain. I don't know if you know, the first revolt started with collisions between Jews and the local population in Caesarea. I'll show you a synagogue which was built in Gaza, and all kind of things which we know about the presence of Jews all over the country, always. The first thing which I want to show is this one. This is a small model which I've done in the Bible and Museum in Jerusalem. This is a depiction of Jerusalem as it was towards the Babylonian destruction of Jerusalem in 586. As you can see, it is an enormous city. Even in the terms of the great cities of the Middle East, Jerusalem was very, very important city, and so it is mentioned. For example, old Pliny, the famous historian, says that Jerusalem from long time is the most famous city in the Middle East. A better compliment cannot be given to an historian who was can be understood as very, very intelligent. As you see, not only intelligent, but also objective. Now, as you see, the city is divided into two. In front, down, you can see the temple and the Temple Mount. To the left, the hill of the city of David, which was where people used to live. And above it, extension of the city, surrounded by a city wall, as it was made by King Hezekiah in the 8th century BC, towards the arriving of the Assyrians. The city had to be fortified, and water was brought into the city, as is mentioned by Prophet Isaiah 22, phrase 10. Altogether, it is very important to mention that even in Hebrew, a great change in the name of Jerusalem, because as you see, I use the word Jerusalem, Yerushalima, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, always like that, because Jerusalem originally was named in Hebrew Yerushalem, which means God Salem, which is a god of night in the Canaanite pantheon, founded it. That's the meaning of the name. But look what happens. When King Hezekiah extended the city to the western hill of Jerusalem, which occupies today the Armenian quarter, Jewish quarter, and Mount Zion, the city became a double city. You see, it is as if two cities on two hills. And therefore, the name of Jerusalem was changed in Hebrew from Jerusalem to Yerushalayim. Because as I mentioned yesterday, Ayim in Hebrew is always double. Einaim, Oznaim, Yadaim, Raglaim. You see, so it says actually Jerusalem was a double city. Hence the difference by the languages, which we have the European languages, we finish with Jerusalem, and Hebrew, which is Yerushalayim. You see, completely different, but that's the explanation that how much the extension of Jerusalem King Hezekiah was a meaningful thing. Even in the first temple period, when King Solomon built the temple, not all the Jews adhered to the newly temple. And you can see in the city of Arad, which exists to this very day, in the excavations we discovered a little temple. Here we can see the Sanctus Sanctorum of the temple, to which you go up by steps. You can see two altars, and the big stone at the back is actually the god, the deity of the temple, which means the Jews still had, and we read it by the prophets, the Jews continued to worship other places, high places, temples, and so on. This one is dated to quite late, to the 7th century BC, which means not far from the time at the end of, or rather the beginning of the 6th century, the temple in Jerusalem was destroyed and the Jews went to exile. Here you can see, I showed yesterday a plan of this area, which is an administrative center in Jerusalem from the very late period of the kings of Judah, which means there was a continuation of history. And here we have a miracle. It is really a miracle. What you can see here is something which not many nations in the world can show. This is a private seal of King Hezekiah. In the middle you can see a bee. We don't know why. But the inscription inside, both upper part and lower part, says, this seal is the seal of King Hezekiah, the son of King Ahaz, king of Judah. Can you imagine such a thing? No one would ever believe that such a find can be found. It was found in the administrative center. I'll tell you more than that. Quite recently, we found another very interesting seal. I couldn't bring it because it is not yet published. It's completely new. Which says to Isaiah the prophet. Imagine a private seal like that, which is very exciting. We are very excited by those kind of things because it gives us, you know, the feeling that history is, the biblical history is revealed. When we go to the second temple period, undoubtedly, Jerusalem is one of the highlights of Jewish history altogether. Not only that, it was recognized as a Jewish city by all the world of the time, all the Hellenistic world. From the least Hellenistic period, I bring a tomb, which is, by in later generation, was attributed to be the tomb of Absalom, the son of King David. But of course it is not true. We don't know to whom it belongs. But the tomb is a highlight of Hellenistic culture. Whoever been ever to Eastern Turkey, you find so many identical, really identical tombs of this type. Not only in Turkey, also I've seen a beautiful example, for example, in Tunisia. So you see that Jerusalem becomes very well accustomed to the Hellenistic world. Another important thing is that when Hellenism started to rule the country, the Hellenisticized Jews wanted to show themselves as similar or identical with all the Hellenistic world. And here you can see a picture which is very indicative. On the right-hand side, you can see a tower which was built by King Hezekiah. Remember, I told you that he fortified the city. And even in the stones inside, we found Babylonian arrowheads which were shot into this tower, and whenever the arrow hit the sand between the stones, it remained there, and the archaeologists simply had to pull them out. But the interesting thing that you see that on the left-hand side, a city wall from the Hellenistic period, which fortified Jerusalem, was also discovered and attached to a tower which is from the first temple period. I would like to tell you that this wall is very important because it has only one gate. This gate is called the Gate of the Garden. And why is it so important? Because it's a point which is very close to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. There is a gate which is called Garden. And I want to remind you that when Jesus was buried in the tomb in Jerusalem, he was buried in the garden of Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea. The only garden which we know of is that garden, and the only gate in this wall, very close to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, is named the Gate of the Garden. What do you need more? You see, and so this helps us. The New Testament, along with other sources and archaeology, give us the full picture of Jerusalem at that time. Another place, which is also always very, very, you know, in a very aggressive and ugly way, was identified as a Muslim heritage. This is the wall of the Cave of the Patriarchs in Hebron. You see, it is decorated. It is a kind of an enclosure The tombs are inside. The way it was built by those pilasters going along it is typical Herodian. And even the Temple Mount in Jerusalem was built exactly in the same way. Exactly in the same way. And recently, UNESCO decided that the Tomb of the Patriarchs of Hebron, the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, and the Tomb of Rachel by Bethlehem are Muslim tradition with which the Jews don't have anything to do. You see the absurd. And one of the things which are amazing, that even Catholic countries, which are so much adhered to holy places, they accepted it and voted for the decision. You don't understand how it happens. Another place to show you this may be the highlight of Jewish life in the Second Temple period is Masada. Here you can see the northern part of Masada, which is a beautiful palace which is built on three steps, the storage for the temple, for this palace, and even the big building which is covered by a roof, a bathhouse. All that forms a part of a beautiful palace built by Herod the Great. Why is it so important? It is found in the middle of the Judean desert. And this, the Judean desert, is important because it was a place of refuge of the Jews. People believe that the rebellious character of the Jews in the Second Temple period was because of the fact that when you are in Jerusalem and you do something against the Roman, it will not take more than half an hour and you are in a desert where you cannot be found. So it was easy to do bad things to the Romans and immediately to find refuge in the desert. And that is why, short time after the oppression of this revolt, which ended in 73 at Masada, again, in 129, 130, a new revolt started, the famous Bar Kokhba revolt, or the second revolt, which was even more cruel than the first revolt. I would like to mention that for the Roman, the fact that such revolts can break, I did not mention that in between, there was another Jewish revolt in 116, was another revolt in Libya, in Cyrenaica of today, Cyrene then, of the Jews against Trajan. And here, in the second revolt, it was Hadrian who had to fight against the Jews. But just to show you how Romans were so proud of it, they even made a coin which had a very big circulation mentioning the revolt. Here you can see another, I bring it on purpose, this one. This is one of the most beautiful palaces of Herod the Great. And where is it located? In the middle of Jericho. Jericho, which everybody claims, well, Palestinians and so on, look what a beautiful thing is there. And this is not the last one. I'll show you some more from Jericho. Jericho, after Jerusalem, there was the most important Jewish city in the country during the entire Second Temple period. So don't be surprised that Herod built himself a palace there. I want to say that modern Jericho, which is not so big, was founded only in the end of the 19th century. When you see pictures of the great painters of the 19th century, Jericho has got only one house there, one building only, which was a Russian rest house. Why Russian? Because many of the Russian pilgrims who used to come in the time of the Tsars to come to the country, they were in Jerusalem, they bought shrouds, they bought cloth, they took the cloth, went down to Jericho, to the place of baptism on the river. They were baptized when they were wrapped with the cloth which they bought, which became shrouds, and when they were buried in Russia, they were wrapped with the same shrouds which they bought in Jerusalem. So they always insisted on going to the place of baptism. So the Russians, who had the greatest, you know, the last great Russian pilgrimage to the country was in August 1914. You remember what happened August 1914? The outbreak of First World War I. So till First World War I. Later, pilgrimage stopped. Why? Communism. They did not allow baptism, traveling pilgrimage. Today, when you come to Jerusalem, you won't believe it. A boat after boat from Odessa is coming on a pilgrimage of Russians. It is unbelievable. People don't believe that so much can be. Thousands and thousands of Russian pilgrims come all year round, especially in Easter time. It is an amazing thing. Now, this is a coin which was struck by Titus and Vespasian. It is called, those who can read Latin, Judea Capta. Judah is captured. And you can see a Roman soldier standing, you know, with great pride. And down below, you can see Judah is sitting and crying. This coin had so much circulation, so many, which means they were very, very proud of the conquest of Judah. Even another thing, the second revolt, also very, very important in our history. The leader of the revolt was a man called Bar Kokhba. This was his nickname. Bar Kokhba, which means the son of stars, because people believe that such a leader must be the star. But we know that his real name was Kosba. So this letter, which was found in the Judean desert, says, from Simon, the son of Kosba, the president of Israel. And what is that? You know the habit of conquering armies. When they come to a village, they enforce the local population to supply food, bed. You know, I don't have to tell you, it is all through history. Bar Kokhba warns his warriors, if you come to a village, behave with full respect. Those of you who will trespass this law of respect to the local population, I'll put chains on his legs, which means I'll punish him. And this is so beautiful to show even how the Bar Kokhba army, how it really functioned during the revolt. The country, even after the second revolt, when most of the Jews who lived in Judah moved to the Galilee and to the Golan, for them the country was still, because in Jerusalem, Hadrian did not allow Jews to come and live. I will say it differently. His decree, his prohibitance of Jews was not on Jews. It says it is prohibited to people who are circumcised. Because one of the reasons for the outbreak of Bar Kokhba revolt was there were two things. First of all, making Jerusalem a pagan city. And number two, prohibition on circumcision. Because he who tried to renew Roman empire and might wanted to unify the values of Greek beauty, and to say that the body is mutilated by circumcision was against it. Very interesting. Why do I tell you that? Because one of the questions which we always ask, how did Constantine in the 3rd century know where the holy tomb of Jesus was? Yes, there was a Christian community in Jerusalem. Who were the Christians in Jerusalem? Mostly Jews. So they were circumcised. They could not live in Jerusalem. The ones who were those of the Gentile who were, of course, not circumcised, and thus they could live in Jerusalem. We know even where, on Mount Zion, and they used to go and pray in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And so just this is the only, and they had to do it clandestinely, because Hadrian persecuted Christianity. I don't have to tell you that the greatest persecution of Christians, and thus many martyrs, one of them was Hadrian, and the second was Diocletian. You see, the end of the 3rd century. At that time begins a movement of Jews who are getting old and coming to the Holy Land to be buried. By the Jews, it was always very important, as much as you could, be buried in Jerusalem, in the Holy Land. And here you see catacombs of sarcophagi in the lower Galilee. Most of the people who are there, amongst other people of great importance, with a Palestinian Jewry, but also many people from the diaspora who used to come there. You know that it was so important that even in this country, when Jews in Poland died, they always asked to bring a little bag with the soil of the land, the soil, let's say call it Palestine, although I don't like the name, the Palestine, the land of Israel, used to ask to bring a piece of soil to their tombs in Poland. I must tell you a personal anecdote. I was born and I came to Israel when I was 2 months old in Lviv. And what happens is a friend of mine, Ukrainian, who lives in Lviv, when his last visit to Israel, he brought me a bottle of his soil from Lviv. He told me, this you should put in your tomb. It was for me such an emotional thing you cannot imagine, really. So I have this bottle kept at home. You see, this habit probably existed in other places also. Because I ask myself, why somebody in Lviv is producing bottle with land with soil from Lviv? Who should do it? Why do they do it? Probably the same thing. Now, another important chapter. I don't know if anybody knows the figure on the picture. I mean the picture. This is Julian Apostate. The population of the country was so strong that Julian, in order to get the support of the Jews in the country, you know that he had lots of fights, you know. He ruled after Constantine the Great and Constance. It was so great that he wanted the support of the Jews, who were very strong power, not only in our country, but they used to serve as mercenaries to the Roman army all over the world, in Turkey of today, in Egypt of today, on the German border of today. And he wanted to have the support of the Jews, especially in the country. So what did he do? He promised to rebuild the temple. He brought materials. He brought even a man called Ammianus, who was supposed to be in charge on the work. And then earthquake started, and all the work he did fell. Short time afterwards, he died in his fight with Persia. So the story ended. But the story, the event of Julian the Apostate, is extremely important to show the power of the Jews living in the country. From the same time, more or less, we don't know exactly when, we see something very interesting. A Jew who came on pilgrimage to Jerusalem, although it was not allowed to Jews to live in Jerusalem, he comes and he brings a word of joy from the book of Isaiah 66. And he writes here, you will see, and your bones will rejoice. And then suddenly it breaks, like the trumpet here in Krakow. Somebody killed him, somebody pushed him, somebody like that. We don't know what happened. At any rate, what happens was that it shows us that in spite of the prohibition, Jews insisted to come and visit Jerusalem. Then we start with another period where the Jewish presence in the country doesn't stop. This is a 5th century synagogue found in Capernaum. I don't know if the name mentions or is reminiscent to you. Capernaum is one of the 3 cities, Capernaum, Chorazin, and Bethsaida, where Jesus, at the beginning of his missionary, came and started to preach in those synagogues. Not on this one, but the one which is buried below. There is another synagogue, which was excavated in parts where he could do without destroying this synagogue, a Franciscan friar, Corbo, Father Virgilio Corbo, and he found the remains. Of course, the Jews in those 3 villages rejected him. Nevertheless, the most important amongst the apostles come from Capernaum and from Bethsaida. As you know, Andre, Peter, Paul, the house of Peter was found in Capernaum. So you see how much it is still a very strong Jewish community, side by side with the creation of Christian communities in the Galilee. This is the interior of the synagogue and the reconstruction, which was done still in the 19th century by 2 important German scholars. But some details are wrong. But altogether, I can give you the impression of the greatness of the synagogue, which we have just seen. Only recently, about few months, actually in June, actually this month, was discovered a new synagogue in a place not far from the Lake of Galilee, from the 5th century. And it is fantastic synagogue because it is all full of mosaics. Of course, many parts are destroyed, but all of them give sense from Old Testament. One of them, for example, which is very beautiful, is Samson is carrying the doors of Gaza. I don't know if you remember the scene. Another one, Judas Maccabeus fighting against the Greeks who are riding on elephants. This one is Noah bringing all the animals into Noah's ark. And there are many more. There are many more scenes. I bought this one because this one is the biggest and the most lavish. But each one is important. And in spite of the fact that the mosaic is destroyed here and there, nevertheless, the wide spectrum of Jewish life, which take everything, draw everything, even mosaics, probably the mosaic makers were not local, because from other places we know that there was a group of a kind of a guild of mosaic makers. Some of them we know were from Egypt, because they give many mosaics which show landscape in the valley of the Nile in Egypt. So this is what they were strong in. On Mount Nebo, for example, they show elephants and giraffes and things. So we know more or less they come from Egypt or something like that. In Gaza, in the sense of Gaza, really in the heart of the city, was discovered another synagogue. And here you can see something which is amazing to show how slowly Jews are immersed into non-Jewish culture. You can see here King David. We know it is King David because on top is written David. David is playing the harp, and you can see around him animals who are listening to it. Why is it so important? Because very similar mosaics we have in the country of Orpheus, who is playing the harp, and all the animals around are listening. So Orpheus turned here into King David. But it shows you the Jews were still very good, able to do things. The transition between Jews who become Christians can be seen here. This is a synagogue in Transjordan. As I told you, Transjordan, which is, by the way, in all the Jewish writings, is called Pariah, which means in Greek beyond, because it is beyond the Jordan. You see a synagogue also from the 5th century. And here you can see all the animals are standing in line to go into Noah's Ark. Why do I say that there is a problem? Because since Transjordan was on the eastern side of the Jordan, and therefore far from Jerusalem, the Jews who lived there were easy to convert. And suddenly in this synagogue, you see, they cover it with soil, put a new mosaic, and it became a church. You see, very interesting. But this is exactly the transition which happens in the country in those period. Maybe the most famous of all the mosaic floors which were discovered in the country is in the synagogue which is not far from Beit She'an in the valley of Jezreel, in the center of the country. On top you can see the zodiac, and they were not embarrassed to put in the middle, to put Helios, the god of sun of the Greeks. But down below, very important scene which repeats in many places, Abraham is attempting to sacrifice Isaac. And the paganism of the Jews is so much that you can see here, you can see Abraham with a knife, big knife standing. Isaac is already very close to the altar. You can see the altar with flames coming from it. The two boys who come with them, and you can see even a donkey, which actually lies on his tail, but still it is a donkey. But what is missing in this picture? To the right, the hand of the Lord saying to him, and there is written in Hebrew, "Don't send your hand into the boy." Al tishalach yadcha el hanar. Very beautiful mosaic. Altogether, the element, and this is very important, the element of Abraham trying to sacrifice Isaac is very important in the early churches in the country. And why is that? Because they take the story of Abraham sacrificing Isaac to God sacrificing Jesus, his son. You see, this goes in some of the churches, and therefore this element of the sacrifice of Isaac was accepted by all the population in the country. 7th century, you see how we go up all the time, because the synagogue I've just shown you is 6th century, because the guild who did it mentions that it was done in the days of Emperor Justinian, 6th century. This is 7th century, a synagogue, very beautiful. It depicts two things. In the middle, the Holy Ark. Down below, this beautiful vignette showing a menorah, and down is an inscription saying, Shalom al Israel, peace on Israel. Very beautiful, very important floor, and it is found today in the middle of the city of Jericho. You see, the middle of the city of Jericho, just outside of the city, but almost in the fringes of the city, there is another beautiful synagogue, the synagogue of Naaran. As I told you, synagogue was the most Jewish city at that time. The map which you see there shows you all the synagogues hitherto found in the country. Since this map was made, I can add about 5 or 6 more. But look, where is the concentration of synagogues? In the Galilee, which is to the left of land of Galilee, and the Golan. You see, the Golan was so Jewish. Look how many synagogues are there. And the more you walk there, the more you discover. Also in Judah, you look down, you can see where the Dead Sea is showing up. Around Jerusalem, also Jewish settlements, although not in Jerusalem itself, because Jews were not allowed to be in Jerusalem. So altogether, you see, the country is very vivid. Also, the lacuna in the center, the missing part in the center, was due to the fact that this is where the Samaritans lived. And the Samaritans, whom you know very well from the story in the New Testament about the Good Samaritan or the Samaritan woman, you see, the Samaritans and the Jews did not live so well together, because everyone believed that he is the right Jew. Because you know that they did all kind of things, such as declaring Nablus as the capital. They built even a temple, and they say this is the temple of Jerusalem. When the Arabs come to the country, they allowed the Jews to come to Jerusalem. The Christians opposed it, and in a kind of a discussion between these and these, the caliph who conquered Jerusalem allowed, unlike what he had promised to the Jews, only 70 families to come to Jerusalem. And this is a piece of jewelry which belonged to this community, because it was found in an area where also houses were found. And here you can see, yesterday I bought 3 or 4. You see a lamp, which is such a Jewish symbol. Remember that the Star of David, which we know so much, is only from the 16th century, not before. The Jewish symbol always was the candelabrum from the temple. And here you can see. So they made about 4 candelabras like this on a wall of a building, or actually on a lintel of a building in the same area where this beautiful gold piece was discovered. So we know the Jews are coming back to Jerusalem. What you see now is another thing, very similar map, with the Arab conquest. Here you can see the Jewish villages in the country after the Arab conquest. The reason for the diminution of settlements was due to the fact that under the Arabs, the country started to lose its fertility. Canals which were made in the Roman period by the Jews, you know, and later by the Byzantine, were neglected. Swamps started everywhere. Roads were broken and interrupted. And so slowly, slowly life became more and more difficult. People started to leave the country, to leave the villages, and to create stronger diaspora more than the country. It is a very sad phenomenon, but it was impossible to live under the oppressing Muslim rulers, especially the Abbasid dynasty. I will tell you that it came, the climax of this problem happened in the year 1006, you see, 1006, when the caliph, the sultan of Egypt, under whose rule the country was ruled, he ordered to destroy all the synagogues and the churches in the country. And the most significant destruction was the first time that the Church of the Holy Sepulchre was destroyed. And it will remain destroyed till the 12th century when the Crusaders built the church which we know today. Although some attempts of reconstruction and a kind of substitute was made in the 11th century. And the Jews are always there. A famous German traveler to the country shows us Jews. The upper one shows you money changers in Jerusalem. And you must understand the Jews were very essential. Many of the pilgrims tell us about it in the movement of pilgrims, of Christian pilgrims to the country. Although the Franciscan friars took on themselves to guide people who came to the country, it is written, it's not that I'm inventing, always many of the pilgrims say, when you come to Jerusalem, ask for a Jewish guide because they know better and they don't fill your brain with all kind of nonsense. That's how they say. So Jews were there. They also were in charge. The contact with the Jews was more pleasing to the Christian pilgrims, also to the Jewish, but mostly to the Christians. And therefore, they also were money changers. And the upper picture shows a Christian pilgrim changes money with the Jews. Down below, you can see a council of Jews. You recognize them immediately by the headdress. Jews are having a council on the affairs of the Jewish community in Jerusalem, again Jerusalem. The Jews were so powerful in the country that they got a Crusader church. The building which you see here is a Crusader church, which is very significant in Crusader life, because the spot on which it is a spot where a Christian pilgrim in the Crusader period came to Jerusalem. It was the first time when we climbed the mountains of Judah, he saw from the distance Jerusalem. And he was so happy that this church was called the Mount of Joy, or in Latin, Mons Gaudii, the Mountains of Joy. Now, in this, according to scholars of the time, which are of course wrong, this was the place of Ramataim Tzofim, the city of Prophet Samuel. So immediately after the expulsion of the Crusaders, the Jews saw in the crypt of the church, they saw a tomb. They identified it immediately as the tomb of Samuel the prophet. And believe it or not, to this very day, many Jews, on the day, traditional day of the death of Samuel, they are going there to make all kind of celebrations on the tomb, so to be the tomb of Samuel. I know it is a Crusader night, but that's a different matter. At any rate, it was purchased by the Jews, but quickly it was confiscated by the Muslims, who turned into a mosque. And that's why you see the minaret, which was added to the main building of the place. The point is that nevertheless, the Jews never forgot that it is their property, and it is today, as I say, it is theirs. Jewish people, Jewish communities in Jerusalem own it, and they've got what we call a Kushan in the registration of land in the country. It is written after Jewish communities. At the lower part of the picture, you can see the Crusader period, a Crusader village, which in the Crusader period was built in the place. The Jews were always liked. I say liked, but you know, because they needed them. This is a Crusader period structure, which looked like a bathtub. What is that? From a famous Jewish traveler who came to Jerusalem in the Crusader period, we know one thing. The Crusaders expelled the Jews from Jerusalem. Not only expelled, they did a terrible massacre with the conquest of Jerusalem by the Crusaders. The Crusader writers, and we've got many of them, are describing that the horses in Jerusalem walked with blood till their knees. So far, they killed the Jews and the Muslims, and there were no inhabitants of Jerusalem. But the Jewish traveler of 1169, he comes to Jerusalem and says, in Jerusalem, there are only four Jews. Why are there? Because the king of Crusader Jerusalem keeps them because they knew very well the art of dyeing cloth. And as the king wanted to have all his clothing with colors, like purple as a king and so on, it was only the Jews who could give it to him. So here, what you see here is a dyeing vat, which means the basin, yes, the tub into which they put the cloth in order to dye it. Another Jewish pilgrim who came a few years later, his name of Ptachia of Regensburg in Germany, he tells us that there was only, he says as follows, there are no Jews but Abraham the cloth dyer who lives in the city. You see, very, very important, because when they needed the Jews, there were Jews. When they did not need the Jews, they massacred them. And now we come to a later period. These are two pictures from synagogue in Safed. I skipped two periods because it was a period a bit of decline, not completely, I must say. Jews start to come to the country. They create four cities which are considered to be holy cities. It is Jerusalem, Hebron, Tiberias, and Safed. And because of the beauty of Safed, being on the highest mountain in the Galilee, with beautiful, beautiful landscape, it gave inspiration to the development and the study of the Kabbalah, which you all know what it is. And this became such a center that more and more Jews, the Ottoman Turks did not care in the 16th century when they conquered the country. And you see here two synagogues of the 16th century which were constructed in Jerusalem. Even Nablus, which is a city, you know, as I say, the capital of the Samaritans, even there was a Jewish community. And here you can see the book of the Torah with two crowns over it, which were taken from a synagogue in Nablus. You can ask, why was it taken from there? Because one of the problems is that the Arabs of those cities, not only there, also in Hebron and other places, used to make riots against the Jews. And those disturbances were so bad that, for example, in 1929, imagine, already when the British were in Palestine, the Jewish community of Hebron, after a terrible massacre, was completely stopped. Nablus stopped. Many of the places, because of the Arabs, stopped. So today, you cannot accuse the Jews of leaving city like Hebron or city like Nablus and so on. They were enforced to do so. One of the pictures which I want to show is very, very interesting. This is a picture which I photographed from the famous gallery of great French paintings in the Louvre in Paris. It shows here Napoleon in Jaffa. And I don't know if you know, the scene is very interesting. When he was in Jaffa, on the way to Acre where he was defeated, he went in Jaffa and there was an epidemic of cholera. And you see Napoleon, in order to encourage them, he entered without any fear going into amongst the sick people. But after he left it, on the way to Acre, he ordered to kill all of them. And they threw all the bodies into the sea. You can ask me, so why do you show it to us? What does it have to do? Napoleon spent a time in the country in 1799. And the thing is that he wanted, in order to found deeper his existence, his presence in the Holy Land, he knew that the only way to do it is to give the Jews all promises possible in order they will have in favor of him, and so they will actually support him in the country. No one knew that soon he will be defeated and leave the country. So he decided to make in Jerusalem a new Sanhedrin where the Jews will be represented and they will have a full autonomy within the framework of the French Republic, which he believed that he will found in the country, which unfortunately was frustrated by the defeat by the British, who expelled him, and he went back down to Egypt. So I thought to show you the presence of Napoleon. There is no other good picture of him in the country. By the way, this place, as you see it now, is, we know where exactly it is. It is in the Armenian Monastery of Jerusalem, which is on the seashore. That it was easy to throw all the corpses down into the lake. Another picture from the 19th century already, where you can see a Jewish kind of calendar, not exactly calendar, but something which people hanged at home, where you can see all the holy places in Jerusalem, in the country, which Jews visit. In the center, you see in the top register, where the public buildings are, that's the Temple Mount. But down below you can see how many holy places were there in the country, most of them traditional, which an archaeologist will not give a head for it. And this is important to show you that the spread of the knowledge of the country and the adherence to holy places was so great in the 19th century. Of course, it's encouraged immigration into the country. And so more and more Jews came, and slowly, slowly, the Jewish presence in the country became even stronger. Here is a very interesting picture. It shows on top is written Lake of Galilee in Hebrew. You see the mountains of Transjordan. Even at a certain point in the mountains, you can see the River Jordan flowing into the lake. And there are tents, which are tents of Arabs. And on the writing of the second one is written the holy city of Tiberias, which should be reconstructed. And why Tiberias? Because very important Jewish family from the island, from Constantinople, from Istanbul, who were crowned by the Sultan as the princesses of the island of Naxos, they were so rich and they decided to come to the Holy Land and reconstruct Tiberias, to rebuild Tiberias, to build their houses there, and to strengthen the Jewish community which was there. And on the sides, all the other things which you see, all the writings of holy shrines which are in the city of Tiberias. Amongst them, maybe the most important, is Maimonides, the greatest Jewish scholar ever, is buried in Tiberias. And so with it, when the Jews are coming back to the country, of course Jerusalem is at the top of the story. And here you can see a famous synagogue, which was utterly destroyed by the Jordanian in our War of Independence in 1948. And thanks to pictures like this one, for example, it is now being restored. When you come next time to Jerusalem, this synagogue will be standing there, and you won't believe that it is from the 21st century. As much as I go to Warsaw and I go to the Rinnik, I can't believe that this is 20th century creation. Exactly the same thing. And so it will be. There were two synagogues like that, that because they were very high, they served as a very important position in the War of 48. One was already restored, and it is a beautiful synagogue, and this will be the second one to be restored. A beautiful picture, which I think is more indicative than anything else, is this one. This one was painted by a German painter who came to Jerusalem in the 19th century, and he loved Jerusalem. And he stayed in Jerusalem as long as he could. And he became, you know, the beginning of the movement of Romanticism of the 20th century, early 20th century. Like, you know, there are pictures of many such painters, for example, in England, all of them, the Pro-Raphaelites and all those. I don't know if you know, at any rate, he was one of them. And he shows a very, very important picture. Jews were not allowed to go to the Temple Mount. So what you can see here, Jewish people are sitting and standing at the gates of the Temple Mount, looking at the Dome of the Rock, knowing that the Dome of the Rock is where the temple was. And you must know that the Dome of the Rock became the symbol of the temple. And if you open many holy scriptures, such as the Haggadah for Passover or elsewhere, whenever they want to talk about the temple in Jerusalem, how is it depicted? As the Dome of the Rock. You understand? It became a symbol to the temple. And you can see the Jews cannot go into the temple, but they can stand at the closest point they can and to see the Dome of the Rock in the past, thinking of the temple in Jerusalem. And the problems of the Jews in Jerusalem never stopped. This is a very interesting picture. From the time of the British Mandate, you see at the background, you can see the Western Wall, what we call the Kotel, where Jews are praying today. You can see here two British, one is a soldier, one is a policeman. They are standing there. The Jews should pray in a very, very modest way, not to bring chairs, not to make a division between men and women, not to blow the shofar, you know what the Jews are blowing, not to do anything which might offend the Arabs. This was a typical British neutrality. And you can see here how they're standing there watching. You know what? One of the things which is very characteristic to the Jews in the beginning of the 20th century when the British were in Palestine, that every Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, the Jews managed to smuggle a shofar, you know, this horn, and to blow at the end of Yom Kippur, to blow the shofar. Immediately, 50 soldiers and policemen of the British will jump on him, and this was very typical. They even created an order of people who are blowing the shofar in Yom Kippur. They always manage, in spite of the inspection, to blow the shofar. You see, the Jews had to fight for Jerusalem being their sacred city, even under the enlightened British. The last phase of Jerusalem history is the war between Israel and the Arabs in 48. And you can see in the easternmost part of the old city, of the Jewish city, far at the back you can see the wall of Jerusalem. And on the left-hand side you see the big tower. You see a tower with a building with a triangular roof. This is the Catholic Patriarchate of Jerusalem, which is inside the old city. But look what happens on the Jewish side. You see, the houses are all abandoned. They could not live there because the Arabs will shoot, or the Jordanians will shoot from the walls. So you see that in the middle of the street, a wall was built, and Jews could live in security only behind these walls. This was actually, I will say, the end of the Jewish city, the Israeli city, actually, because it was after 48. All the area between here and the city wall was a no man's land, completely neglected, and actually, that is how it was. After 67, it became really most beautiful gardens around the walls of the old city. This is another slide which shows you the houses, the Arab houses, which were constructed against the Western Wall. In the lower right-hand side, you can see the Western Wall, the continuation, not where the place where the Jews are praying today, but further to the south. Of course, there is further to the north. And you see that there are Arab houses, all dated from the 14th, 15th century, which are resting against the wall. And so the wall was completely eliminated. Only due to a very harsh earthquake in 1548, that all the houses which are in the area, which were in the area, which today is the Western Wall, they all collapsed. And so the Western Wall was exposed and Jews started to pray there. Beforehand, the Jews used to pray along the Southern Wall because many Herodian remains are there. So it was more obvious that this is a place which still belongs to Jerusalem of the Second Temple period. The memory of Jerusalem of the Second Temple period is still vivid in Israel today. And everybody is talking about rebuilding, not everybody, I want to say, but many people who are very, very religious believe the construction of the Third Temple and all kind of stories to keep the connection between Jerusalem and the Jewish people is so strong. What I try to show you in my talk is to show you the Jewish presence, one way or the other, never ceased. There is not one single moment when Jews don't live in Jerusalem. Even in period when they were not allowed to live in Jerusalem, such as Hadrian's time, the villages around were Jewish villages. We know it from a very neutral source, from the Bishop of Caesarea, whose name was Eusebius, and he tells us about every village around Jerusalem, a big village of Jews, a big village of Jews, a big village where Jews and Christians live together, a Christian village, you know, and so we learn exactly which one was which. In other words, we must say that actually this is what is the situation. Now I say one political word because I think it is important and you'll understand why I say it. You know that the Palestinians today, when they speak about they want a free state, this is their right, about two states for two nations. The problem say that Jerusalem is its capital. And this is something which is completely distorting history. The Muslims ruled Jerusalem from the conquest in the 7th century through the Umayyad dynasty, the Abbasid dynasty, the Khawarizm, the Ayyubids, the Mamluks, the Ottoman Turks. So you see, very, very long period. Jerusalem was never a capital of any political entity under the Muslims. Even when they conquered Palestine, they founded a new capital, and the town of Ramle, which is today between Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, this became the capital of the Muslims in the country. And it was very important so far that even Jews made the big yeshiva, the big center of learning, in Ramle. Indeed, Jerusalem was religiously important, but never, never, never political. And we think that the world will do just with the Jews if they let us have Jerusalem as a capital. The Arabs can have their capital wherever they want, and we don't deny the spiritual values of Jerusalem also to the Muslims. And whoever comes to Jerusalem, you see that the Muslims have got full autonomy on the Temple Mount, and I think that the arrangement in the future will be very similar. I'm sorry that I have to say it again because of UNESCO's decisions. I think that you never heard many of the things I said, and I think that it is important to know that historical facts are these. So thank you very much. Thank you. 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 Now, if somebody has questions, even in English or Polish, I'm ready to answer. I'm not so sure I'll be able to answer in Polish, but still, to ask it, you can. He asked me, what about Hebrew? I can imagine there's one or two speak Hebrew here. Yes. No questions? I'm surprised because I've got so many. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Thank you.